Hey, how's it going out there, Cider Chat? This is your Rob, Dave Clower. I just go by Dave, Alma Cider, here in Western Washington, Pacific Northwest. We're along the foothills of the North Cascades in the beautiful Skagit Valley. And thanks for joining us. You're listening to us on Cider Chat.
Hey, 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 my name is Rhea Windcaller, and I am the producer and cider MC of this weekly podcast, where we speak with makers, cider enthusiasts, and folks within the cider trade from around the world. Welcome to Cider Chat. You heard our featured guest, Dave Clower, bringing us into this here episode, and we're going to be talking to him shortly. And what's really cool about this here particular episode is that Dave provides a model for anyone out there thinking about starting a cidery who doesn't necessarily have their own orchard. So right now he's planting an orchard, but they are not producing fruit from their orchard, and yet he's getting it done. So it provides a lot of hope. It's a really cool model. And on top of that, he's making some great cider. So there's a lot to be had here. So this is your notice to get your cider now ready to enjoy this conversation with him, because that'll be coming up soon. But first, we have a wee bit of news from out and about in Ciderville. Cider Days is back, and it's going to be taking place, as always, on the first weekend of November in my special spot of Ciderville, which happens to be both Franklin County and Western Massachusetts, because, of course, over time, we have had more cider makers in our region coming on board. So we have to kind of go out of the borders of Franklin County. You're going to be finding events happening everywhere, and there's a very special part of this, which I am calling Cider Days 2.0, where we're elevating the experience and we're going to be having some amazing events happening in downtown Greenfield. We'll be kicking off Cider Days 2.0 with a guided tasting over Calvados and American Apple Brandy. This is going to be a Star Spangled Banner event, because we will have in-house America's oldest distillery. So it's really the OG of all cider and spirits in the country. And that is Laird's & Company. If you've heard about Applejack in America, it really all started with Laird's. And we're going to be having the queen of the scene, Lisa Laird's Dunn, the ninth generation of this family. Her son, Gerald, is now involved. So it's going on to 10th generation. The legacy of this family is outstanding. I mean, we're talking about history going back to 1698. And then in the early 1700s is when they first made their commercial, like their first sales slip. They have the whole history there. And Lisa Laird's Dunn is going to be attending Cider Days 2.0, which is why I'm telling you to save the date now for that first weekend of November, because the kickoff event is the Calvados and American Apple Brandy tasting. And then Lisa is also going to be doing a presentation on Applejack, the history of Applejack. And that's going to be on Saturday morning. So I can't even tell you everything that's going to be happening right now, because I just want to hold it. And if you want to stay tuned, get notified when the tickets go live. The first tickets that go live will be for the Calvados and American Apple Brandy tasting, and they're going to go out in August. So that first week of August, those tickets will be going live, and I can guarantee you they will be sold out. So get your name in the barrel now, because you don't want to miss this event. And the way to do that, there's two ways. One is you could send an email to info@ciderchat.com. and say, sign me up for Cider Days 2.0, and we'll put you on the email list. Or you could simply go to Cider Chat, and you'll see a link there for e-cider news, and you just sign up and get registered that way. It's going to be so much fun. I cannot wait. I mean, I haven't even told you all the different Calvados are going to be tasting and more about the apple brandy. I'm going to save that for now. I just want to start getting it out there that, yes, this amazing wonderful, beloved event is returning. You're going to see some OGs of the OGs once again and just coming into the heart of cider, where it really got lifted off here in America. It took place in my special spot of Ciderville. So I'll have more about that. We're going to have some episodes coming up in the coming weeks about that. But for now, all you need to know is Calvados and American Apple Brandy Tasting. Of course, there is something you could check out. If you have an issue of Insider Japan in hand, as I do the summer issue, and you go to page 12, they cover the Calvados and Apple Brandy Tasting that took place in 2019. And I have a recording of it, and it's episode 208. There's going to be links in the show notes. And I think that the folks at Insider Japan did a wonderful job of giving an overview of that particular episode. It's tells you all the details of the different spirits that we were drinking at that presentation in 2019. And it'll give you a sense of what we're going to be doing this coming November. But we've changed things up a bit. We have some of the same Calvados, but we have some real heavy hitters coming in. And of course, also Lair's Apple Brandy. I mean, talk about OG of OG. And there'll be more coming up about that. Oh, so cool. So check out episode 208 if you want to hear a little bit about the tasting. And also send an email to info@ciderchat.com if you want to get on the list so we could contact you when tickets go live, or sign up for eCiderNews@ciderchat.com. Strange apples. Up next, we're going to our featured conversation with Dave Clower of Alma Cider, based in Washington State. We'll first be hearing Dave speak about his background, where he's from, and how he ended up in Washington State. We'll also be covering a bit on the setup of his cidery, why that region is so spectacular for apples, and, of course, his cider. So grab a glass and join this chat with Dave Clower of Alma Cider, based in Skagit Valley in Washington State.
Grew up in Southern California. I moved all around, went to some different colleges, and then I became a nurse. And then I came to Washington State in 2008 as a travel nurse. Okay. Actually, back in the 90s, I was going to be a pro snowboarder, I thought.
Whoa.
And I really hurt my knee down in the skiing in the Andes in South America. And so that dream kind of went away. But I had heard about this place called Mount Baker, Washington. It has the world record snowfall. And one year they got like almost 1,300 inches of snow. And so a travel assignment came about, and it was near Mount Baker, Washington. And so I came here for the chance. And actually my youngest son is named after the native name for Mount Baker, which is Kulshan. Kulshan. And so that's just how much we love the mountains and in this area. So
can you see Mount Baker from your home?
Yeah, so not from my house, but from anywhere nearby. So the foothills start here, and in different areas of the valley, there's really beautiful viewpoints. So Mount Baker's a glacier. It's part of the Cascade Mountain Range. So we have like the largest glacier on the contiguous United States here in Washington State. It's called Mount Rainier. And then we have lots of glacial volcanoes coming up, and the most north. So it's about, 20 miles from the Canadian border is Mount Baker, or Como Kulshan is how the locals would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I am aware of Mount Baker or Como Kulshan because I have climbed it and back in the day when I was doing a lot of mountaineering, and I was also lowered. You know, they were looking for volunteers to like try, you know, I did a lot of rescue stuff. And so, you know, who wants to get lowered into the glacier and then climb out? And I was like, oh, I'll go first. And what a trippy experience, the blue eyes and powerful, powerful mountain, really powerful.
Yeah, I think, you know, the crevasse rescue, I guess you were down in it. That's pretty scary stuff if you, you know, weren't carefully lowered and just dropped down.
No kidding.
So some people just drive up there and just walk up without training, which you could totally do, but that is not really recommended. You don't know. Mountains are big.
Yeah, they sure are. They sure are. Washington State has some beautiful mountains, no doubt. Now, so you are up in like northwestern Washington State. And give us a little bit of the imagery, if we can, since we're just kind of talking about the area, of what your orchard looks like. You have, I think it's like 36-acre orchard and called Bitters and Sharps Orchard. What does it look like if I was standing in the orchard right now, just a surrounding area to give folks over on the other side of the world a glimpse of your special spot?
Yeah, so if you were to go to our property, you look like you're standing in a park, and you may or may not see like 70 elk hanging out in our field, and you would not see any apples right now. So there is a lot of infrastructure that needs to go into place. It's very rural. There's no infrastructure there. We have some wells. So we need to erect a very large fence to keep the elk out, because they could do damage. They're huge animals.
Yeah, definitely.
So it's a quarter mile from the Nooksack River, which comes down. It's a tributary off of Mount Baker. So it's just north of the Skagit Valley. And then we're right at the foothills. Our property line touches DNR land. So our 36 acres is kind of having like a million acres. And it just goes up right into the hills. That eventually becomes, you know, glacier, and then just moves on from there into the wilderness.
Dave, you said that there's no apples, but that's because we're talking in May, right?
No, they're not planted there yet. So
okay.
I have 5,000 trees so far. And so we have some land leases here nearby my house. So our property is about 22 miles north of us. In a town called Acme, Washington. And so there will be lots of apples there. They're just not there yet. So we're totally a teeny little business, and it's basically me and my wife that do everything. And it's just a lot. So growing apples is sort of a whole separate business from making cider. And there's kind of two businesses involved. And growing apples, especially when orchards are not mature, is just input and no output. And so I found out that if we press apples, make juice, that's a value-added product. And if we ferment that juice, it has even more value. And so we're selling cider to pay for the orchard pretty much. But we have a 3.5-acre land holding down here that we're leasing on a beautiful place called Fur Island. It's here in Skagit Valley. So it's a cutout by the Skagit River, and it's basically like a wetland area prior to the Salish Sea or the Puget Sound. Some of the most fertile land. I think there's an estimate that's like the top six most fertile land in the world is here in Skagit Valley. Wow. And we grow a lot of agricultural products. Additionally, we have 1.5 acres in Cedro Woolley, which is the next town north. And then another about 1.7 acres where we produce the cider in Mount Vernon, Washington at Tulip Valley. So we have lots of little fruit baskets. And I hope that, you know, someday the dream is to have our land be really productive as well. But it's going to take a little work to get there.
Well, I want listeners out there in Ciderville to know that one of the reasons why I'm talking to Dave is that, well, he's an outstanding person. And he makes incredible cider. So, you know, you are a testament that you don't necessarily need that on-site orchard to make super quality cider. You know, you and I met up at CiderCon, and then you passed me some of your ciders, and I am wowed. I mean, literally, wow. Just the balance, the complexity. They don't make me work. I'm just like, I'm relaxed. It allows me to relax into the glass and see the fruit kind of like bouncing out of the glass and pairing it with food. So we're going to talk about the ciders, but I just really want to start there for listeners out there in Ciderville to know that there's a reason why we're talking to Dave right now and the work that you're doing with Alma. I'm stoked for the future, but you are already in the present and cranking it, man. You got it going. Definitely.
That means a lot coming from you. I appreciate it. You're like a rock star in the cider industry, and just keep on rocking it. You're doing awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Well, hey, let's back up a little bit because I kind of threw you into like the, you know, we were talking about the territory and stuff, but you started a little bit with your backstory doing like snowboarding and then being in like San Diego. Totally. Is that true, like San Diego County or
Orange County?
Orange County, okay, right. Orange County, love it. You know, I have family there. Who wouldn't want to live down there? That's pretty beautiful.
I don't.
Hey, it is a nice place to visit. But anyways, so there you are. And Washington State produces a lot of apples. It produces a lot of hops. It's a big, you know, craft beer scene. So at what point did you get involved in cider and how?
This gal at work had a party. My wife and I went and it was an apple pressing party. And since I'm not from apple growing regions, I had never been to one, but it was so cool. It was in the fall, which is, you know, my favorite season. Everybody's wearing flannels and there was a fire going and, you know, there was like little toddlers running around and grandparents there and everybody brought whatever fruit they could and everybody took turns cranking and pressing the juice and everybody left with a couple of jugs. And a friend of mine gave me some yeast and said, here, pitch this yeast. And I had made beer in college, so I knew what would happen. I pitched the yeast in there and then I just left it in the garage and I didn't even consider it until like the following spring. It had cleared up quite a bit and the sediment dropped, but I didn't do any fancy filtering or add anything. It was just basically what the flavor of the fruit that people brought turned into after fermentation. And actually my wife said that was the best cider I've ever made because I didn't do anything to muddle it up. That was kind of my entree into cider making. I'm a registered nurse to back up a little bit. Yeah. And I have been for a long time. And for, I don't know, the last 6 years prior to the pandemic, even I was kind of have been over it. And I really like being outside and working outside. And I thought we should have like a vineyard or something. And, you know, people think I'm crazy because I'm a nurse. And so I said, all right, well, how about I go get a master's in agriculture, which I'm actually finishing on the 13th of June.
Whoa. Woohoo. Yeah. Cheers. Cheers to that. Bing.
Nice. So I get a master's in agriculture. And now, you know, people take me a little bit more seriously when I say, hey, we should start something agricultural right near here. I'm so fortunate because Washington State University has an extension here in Mount Vernon, and they have one of the largest cider research facilities in the country as far as numbers of cider fruit, different kinds. My committee chair is actually the director of the extension, and she's also in charge of the cider program there. Nice. And so I just kind of fell into this, and we had so many different kinds of apples and they all taste different. And there's, you know, they grow so easy here. As we said, we're like right near the coast, so it's not too hot. We get lots of water. You actually don't even have to water mature trees at all. I started learning more about cider fruit. I made some friends with some orchardists here nearby. I bought some fruit and I didn't have a way to press a large amount. And so I went over to the winery that's across the street from the extension. It's called Tulip Valley Winery. And I made friends with the owner there and I said, hey, I got some fruit, but I don't have a way to press it. I got like 2,000 pounds of pear. I said, can I use your equipment? I'll give you some juice. And they make cider there as well, actually. I think back in 08 or 06, maybe, Hector De Leon, he's one of the owners there. He has a cider company called Burro Loco Cider, and they won best in show at Glencap back in the day. He has lots of knowledge about growing fruit and pressing, really kind of stand back approach, just kind of let things happen. But he let me use the equipment. And so the following year, I said, hey, I got a little bit more fruit. I brought like 4,000 pounds. And then that year, he just gave me a key to the place. And he said, you can use our equipment. Since 2019 was our first year commercially pressing. And then we released it in March of 2020, which was a great time to be starting a company.
Yikes. So you have all these different scenes that you're involved in as a registered nurse. Are you still working in that capacity, Dave?
Yeah, so my wife and I are both registered nurses.
Can we give her a shout out? Because, you know, we want to get her name.
Clower. Yeah, Heather Clower. She is awesome. And she's half of everything I am and more. I'm just a portion of what she is. But
True love. All right, good.
Could not do it without her here. So
you're both registered nurses.
Yeah, I help deliver babies. I'm a labor and delivery nurse.
Oh,
and
my wife,
Heather, is a neonatal intensive care unit nurse.
Oh, my goodness. Well, thank you for all that you do. I've had the pleasure in my life and my career to work with nurses quite a bit. Outstanding people. Now with this this agricultural degree, I also wanted to give a shout out to the head of the department that you mentioned.
Carol Miles. She gave me a shot and believed in me. And so when you go to graduate school, a PhD, a professor, has to agree to be your committee chair. And that's how you get accepted into a graduate program. And I just came in and I'm just a nurse. I'm just a guy. And I talked to her and chatted her up. And she believed in me and said, I'll take you on. And it's been a long slog because I've got all these other things going on, but finally finishing. And so I will actually tip my hat there to Carol Miles. And actually, if you read a lot of literature, research papers about cider fruit, you probably will see her name on the bottom.
Here you are. You have this degree. You got this orchard going on. Let's talk about the ciders and the sourcing of the apples that you're doing. Are you bringing apples directly into your cidery and pressing them?
We try to grow as much as we can. Mm-hmm. So I have some trees that I inherited from WSU. When they do a research study, they get grants to do their studies. When the grants are done, the studies are over, and they need that land for the next study. I inherited 68 15-year-old trees, all sorts of varieties, lots of French and English stuff. I moved those across the street to Tulip Valley. They all took, except for like two or three. Apples want to grow. You put them in good soil, which is what we have here, and we got the right climate, and the tree will grow and be fruitful.
Totally. I need to back you up. So I just want to be clear. So these were 15-year-old saplings that you then planted. Is that what I'm hearing?
Not saplings. They were all grafted trees.
Grafted with different varieties.
So, different varieties on different rootstocks that they were trialing at the time. But
they were dug up and then moved to a new location. Because that's a pretty big tree, 15 years old.
The root ball on many different rootstocks is probably about the size of a basketball. Not that hard to dig up and push over. And toss it in the back of the truck, especially we're moving it across the street, literally.
Yeah, well, I was asking about that because I've been doing a lot of clearing of my land recently, and I feel I have very intimate experience with root systems right now because we're pulling out a lot of trees and I'm digging up trees. So that's great. 15-year-old, pop them in there, not a lot of air contact, so they don't get too much damage, and they go right into the hole, and away you go, right?
Yeah, we actually dug those up, moved them over in the truck, and then planted them the next day.
I imagine you have a little bit of machinery helping you with the holes there, digging up the holes. Is that true? Are you hand digging that? I got to ask that, man, because, you know, I'm hand digging holes at home. So I'm super jealous of anybody with any kind of machinery to like dig holes. You're like, yeah, we just popped it over there. And I'm thinking, yeah, that would not happen in my reality. I'd be out there like digging, you know, for 3 weeks to get 15 holes in the ground.
Yeah. Well, actually at the winery, they do have equipment and they have a tractor and you put an auger on the back and it's like, you know,
two seconds
to dig a hole. At our other locations, hand rolled with a sod roller. It's like a big drum that you put water in and it has a handle on it. And so we just rolled out like 3.5 acres, also driving back and forth with a little miniature lawnmower to compact our ground. We just planted some cover crop seed. And hopefully at the end of this week, the next couple of days, we're going to put in 1,800 more trees out there on Fur Island. But
nice.
No, we don't have really big equipment everywhere. But we'll use it definitely when we get the opportunity because it's a time saver.
Right. I just want to let folks listening or say, it makes it sound so easy, but not all of us have that, you know, accessibility to equipment all the time. But when you do, it makes a big difference, right?
Sure.
So you have the source of apples, and what kind of presser are you using on site? It'd be kind of cool to hear your equipment and your just cidery setup dimensions and whatnot.
Sure. So there's a variety of pressing equipment. So I have a Speedle mill and also a Speedle bladder press. That's my own. It's like a 90 liter press. And then we also have like a hydraulic press. And then we also have a squeeze box type of press. And I'll tell you what, the little Speedle, as far as the grinder goes, and the little hydro bladder press, I can press as much fruit as I can with the, you know, giant 2-ton good nature squeeze box, but it's a lot more lifting, right? So just like digging that hole, you could use a shovel and you could probably dig a hole as quickly, but it's a lot more work. So with the good nature squeeze boxes, which we used last season, we were doing probably, I think our goal, our most that we pressed in a day was about 12 bins of fruit. That's apples, right? Because pears are, this is the only thing that's, you know, a total hassle, but pears.
But you're working with pears too?
Yeah, I'm going to send you a bottle of our Perry that we made this year with the Perry pears. And actually, we just planted 9 more varieties, including 2 red flesh Perry pears. Wow. So check for those coming down the pike in a few years.
What varieties are those? What are the Perry pear varieties that you're using?
Go to North American Scion Exchange. Mm-hmm. It's like a Facebook group. Mm-hmm. You could say, hey, I'm looking for this. And it's an exchange. So there's people that want to exchange for anything. So you could send them Scion wood in exchange for Scion wood that you want. Or, you know, you could offer to pay people. It depends on whatever your agreement is. But you can get all sorts of varieties, not just apples and pears and quince, but figs, persimmons. There are people there who want to graft all sorts of stuff. And so it's a really big kind of community. But we got 3. They're called Blood in the UK. So Blood for the red flesh. Yeah. There's another one too, Rotic de Ostergrund. It's a Scandinavian, I believe. So if you go to the USDA NRDS website, it's the germplasm bank. And you could, any variety of anything that you could think of, at least in the United States, we have a bank to collect these, you know, different species so that they could keep growing. You know, they have these like underground places in Antarctica and stuff. Mm-hmm. But if you do it before January 1st, you could just write them a letter. Hey, I want these varieties. And then you basically just pay for shipping and they'll send you Scion of all these obscure things or non-obscure things. And you can get, you know, directly from the source. So getting it from the first source that I mentioned, like you're just trusting the person, right? That they're reputable and they actually are sending you something that you want.
Or that they know what they're sending you too, right? Sometimes it's like in, keeping track of signwood could be a job in and of itself, but.
So I got some Redfield. We already grow Redfield. And you know, I think you were in the same, I don't know if you were in the same conference that I was, but it's a type one. So the, not just the flesh is red, but the leaves, the foliage, the bark inside the bark, the wood is red. Mm-hmm. And somebody sent me some, and when, after it grafted, it was, the leaves weren't red. And I'm like, that's not that. So just, you know, be wary of your source, and then hopefully they have good orchard practices and it's healthy wood too. You can get certified virus-free scion wood, like through universities. So I've gotten stuff from Cornell. We'll send you stuff. Minnesota State, Michigan, WSU also. It's a lot more expensive, certified virus-free. But really, you only need a stick, and then in 3 years, you can make a million sticks off that stick. Mm-hmm. So if you're not in a rush. Also, Fedco, they're a great resource. You could buy scion wood from them. Mm-hmm. They have all sorts. There's just so many places. Or if you just know, you know, at my grandma's house, there's my favorite apple tree. You can just go cut a piece of wood of that, and mm-hmm. who cares what the name of the fruit is if it makes good fruit, you know?
Right on. So cool. I'm sorry, I kind of digressed off when I heard you were making perry, which is really cool because that's the first I heard. So let's go back to your cidery here. You have the presses, you have the grinder. What are you fermenting in, and are those...
So it's not my location, right? I'm at the Tulip Valley Winery, and they allow me to use their equipment. And then also I've brought in my own equipment there as well. Mm-hmm. I hope in 2024 we're going to have our own facility and just kind of be independent. I want to make it might be like Skagit Cider Collaboration, like a coalition. Cool. There's like 7 or 8 really good cider makers here mm-hmm. in our valley. And so we used to grow most of the apples and hops used to be grown here, right where we're at. And then after mm-hmm. they dammed up part of the Columbia River, mm-hmm. they moved a lot of production to Eastern Washington. And now Eastern Washington is the number one apple and hop grower in the world. We make lots of fruit. But it grows easier here on this side. And so there's a lot of really great cider makers. As I said, at the place where I make it, there's 3 of us. So Alma Cider, Burro Loco Cider, Railroad Cider. Just in town, we have Ragged and Ripe. There's Terramar, The Garden Path. I'm forgetting a couple of people, but there's a lot of great cider makers. Mm-hmm. So these places are like really expensive, right? You have to either own this land and then build a facility or rent a facility. And then the equipment alone. So like apple pressing, like just you could do anything. Like you could, you know, have a Cadillac, or you could have a Ford Pinto if they make those still. You can still get to the same location. It just is a different ride, right? Mm-hmm. In our instance, like we're growing an orchard and making a cidery. We just have our expenses going to different places. So if we could have a kind of a co-op where, you know, different people invest their resources into different essential pieces of equipment, we could get more equipment and have a better mm-hmm. facility. That's kind of the dream here. But so when we press fruit, we press into international bulk containers. So IBC totes, they're usually like 250 gallons, 300 gallons. We press straight into that, and then we'll kick off fermentation in there. And then as soon as fermentation starts, we'll move that over into stainless, and we have stainless steel vessels. And then we also have a variety of wooden barrels, different kind of bourbon, whiskey barrels, stuff like that. So I think that wood age behind you, that was in fresh bourbon barrels that were just emptied. My buddy has a distillery here in town, and when you make bourbon, it has to be in virgin wood to be called bourbon. Mm-hmm. And when they empty it, it's totally worthless to them. And so I was hanging out, and he was sawing a barrel in half. And I was like, Ben, what are you doing? And he's like, oh, no, I'm going to make a planter or something. Yeah. And I said, well, I'll take those barrels. And so there's a lot of outlets for barrels.
Well, let's talk about that cider, because it won like two big awards, like Best in Show for like SIP and the Glencap. I mean, that was both in 2021, so that was a nice way to kind of slowly start leaving the pandemic. Crazy good cider. I actually just had it this weekend. I was at like a reunion with friends, and I paired it with a fish dinner with cod, and I like blew my mind. It was this marriage between the wood where it was just like cradling the cider. It wasn't overwhelming it. And you're telling me that was a bourbon barrel, but I'm thinking like that was like an apple barrel. It was just like saying, hello, you know, caress me and hold me and then bring me out and show me off to the world because I have my dance dress on. So smooth. Just super clean and not overwhelming. I mean, the profile of this particular cider called the Wood Age was just absolutely balanced to perfection. Again, a cider that doesn't make me work, you know, like it's lovingly brings me down the aisle, but did not make me trip over like the barrel, the wood. So what was it? What are you doing with your ciders that are just, you know, cranking it out like this? Because that is like a damn good cider. I hope you have a little bit more because people are going to be hearing. Here,
but actually, we just put a bunch into Bright Tank just yesterday. And So I think we'll be bottling the rest of our woodage next week. But
So
it starts off with the apple, right? And so we grow, like, I think, in my personal opinion, I've not been around to too many places, but we grow some of the best fruit anywhere, I think, right here. And Gravenstein is a fantastic apple. So just imagine when you're picking apples, like what we said here, it's the end of May and it was 60 and drizzly. When you're picking Gravensteins, you're probably wearing shorts because it's really early. And so it might be like the tail end of August or the very beginning of September. But you're out in ladders and tall grass and you're wearing shorts for sure. And so maybe that's one reason that I like Gravensteins, because it's not just like pouring rain on us. But when you bite into the fruit, it's just so juicy and crisp and like really tart. And so it's one of my favorite apples. It's right, heirloom apple. And so that's just Gravenstein, single varietal. And then so we press it into IBC tote and then we'll ferment it to dry in stainless and then rack it off of there and then put it into a wood barrel and just let it set in there for 5 months or so. We're really, it's the end of May right now, so I guess it's probably 7 months. But I don't do anything to it. It's just...
that is the way, right? That is the way, as a Mandalorian would say, the way. but, you know, something about Gravenstein, because I've had a number of Gravensteins from different parts of this country, at least. And people are doing single varietal Gravensteins that, I mean, really all of them are just like kind of floor me. Because it is such a beautiful, beautiful apple to work with in that way. And it makes a nice single variety cider. But this one, it had like the crispness and the brightness of the Gravenstein that didn't get overwhelmed by the oak. And I thought that was what really stunned me in that way. It didn't tone down the apple at all. The apple really came forward and was pronounced. And again, just kind of cradled by the oak. You know, you're selling me on that territory. You know, I speak to a lot of people. Everybody says, we make the best apples in the world. And I believe you. I believe you. No doubt. I'm tasting it in the glass. It's nice that we have a whole bunch of these like super, you know, center of the universes for apple growing, no doubt.
If you use world-class fruit, then the cider is going to come out good.
Well, it definitely does come down to the fruit. But I think having, you know, taking care of yourself while making cider making, you know, so that you're not overwhelmed and you're not becoming the crabby cider maker, because that could happen. I always think that happy people kind of make happy things. I don't know, it's my experience, but you know
me. Positive outlook. Yeah, I like it.
Right on. So let's talk about the semi-sweet. because I had that too a while ago now, and that was probably like soon after I met you in person, and we've been in touch before then, of course. But that was really, you know, I was a little like, okay, semi-sweet. I never know how to approach it. It was like the first cider that I was having from you, and I thought, you know, what is this going to be? Because sometimes semi-sweet could come out and it'd be like sweeter than I expect. But this was just so sessionable. Just, again, totally balanced. Not, nice. You know, not over the top. Super smooth, crisp, you know, bright, fine clarity, perfect bubbles. A friggin' delicious cider. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the apples and the semi-sweet and what you did with that.
I always go back and forth because I personally don't like sweet ciders, but I'm not making it for me, right? I make it for people to enjoy. Mm-hmm. And so I'll make a semi-sweet. I like dry ciders. And I typically like ciders without a lot of adjuncts to it because I like the fruit to shine. We have a blend of apples, and I think I listened to this story on NPR about this really fancy cheesemaker in Northern California. They were talking about, you know, a teeny wheel. It's like the size of like a half dollar, like $20 or something. It's a really fancy cheese. But they were talking about their mac and cheese that they make on this interview. And the lady said, you know, the secret is I mix 5 kinds of cheeses. Well, I took that to heart. This is a blend of, you know, 5 kinds of fruit. And then the Skagit Valley is actually, we have 2 of the largest honey producers on the West Coast of the United States right here. And if you buy honey directly, especially in bulk, it's like really inexpensive. And I had not known that there's so many single varietal honeys out there. Mm-hmm. You can get honeys that taste exactly like the thing that the bees were pollinating. Mm-hmm. So it's 5 types of fruit, fermented dry, aged for, you know, 5 to 7 months, just like we do. And then back sweetened with a little bit of honey. And well, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, perfect. Most of your ciders are conditioning for about 7 to 8 months, maybe 5 to 7 to 8 months.
We just let it do its thing for like 2 months, and then, I mean, 2 seasons, excuse me. Mm-hmm. And then we look at it and see, you know, what kind of blends we can make. And then, okay, I think this is finally ready. And you know, when I think it's ready, something will come up, and then it'll be like 3 weeks later and it is even better. And I'm glad we didn't do it. Now that's like, that happens all the time, but I'm going to send you a bottle of our 100% quince.
Oh, let's talk about that.
Two years ago, I have not had a lots of experience with quince outside of eating like a Spanish membrillo paste. Yeah. Quince are related to apples and pears, but they're their own genus. And a farmer nearby brought me like 3 40-pound boxes, and he said, hey, this is from my tree, do you want these? I said, yeah, absolutely, we'll press them right now. And we had the equipment out, so they came late in the season, and because quince are harvested late, but we pressed it. It was super fibrous and hard to press. It's kind of like grating a potato almost.
So he might have picked them too early.
Yeah, I'm not sure because he didn't really know much about them. This is my first experience with them.
Yeah.
But I put them through the grinder and we pressed in it. It smelled and tastes like lemonade coming off the press. Wow. It was super clear, kind of like a cloudy sort of white. And so it didn't have much color, but it had just crazy aromas and flavors. And so that year I mixed it in with my with my rosé that I made. So the year before that, I made this rosé with 2 types of red flesh, and we won like a platinum award from Cider Craft magazine. And then that year, I only had access to 1 type, and it was super good. It just wasn't as interesting as the year before. Mm-hmm. And so I only had a couple of gallons. It was like 3 gallons of this quince, but I was like, I'm going to add it to the rosé and make it more interesting. Mm-hmm. And then I started researching more about quince because it was such an interesting fruit. And I found out that like one of the largest quince producers in the Pacific Northwest is like, you know, 8 miles from here. So on this
score, oh my God. Wow. And she likes you too.
Oh, thank you. Oh, she's so nice.
You're one of the few rare people that get her Quinn. So you are, you know, you are in, man.
Yeah. So from here, like 7 miles away, there's a town called Anacortes, and there's a lot of ferries. You could take ferries to the San Juan Islands or to Alaska if you want. But you could take this 3-minute ferry to a town, an island called Guaymas Island. And there's a gal there, and her name is Edith Walden, and she has Willow Rose Bay. It's an orchard. So she does it all by herself, which is pretty amazing. Mm-hmm. And she, I think she has like 180 trees. She also, by the way, Rita, has a 157-year-old Gravenstein apple tree.
Wow. Okay. I'll talk to her about that when we do our recording. Yeah. What are we going to see coming up for this year? What's on the docket?
Every year we're going to make the same three kind of flagship ciders. So we have our dry, and so that's a blend of apples, fermented dry. And I'm typically that most proud of that one because it's
delicious.
Just,
yeah.
Yeah. And then we have our semi-sweet for people who aren't into dry. And so it's back sweetened with a touch of honey. Mm-hmm. And then we'll have our botanical, which is our hopped. And so, mm-hmm. as you said, Washington State's like number one mm-hmm. in hop production. Mm-hmm. There we go.
I'm going to open this cider right now. I have it here. It's all chilled. So you're talking about the hop cider. This is how much I adore you because I'm going to open this in front of my my computer here. So let's see if I get it. Aroma's coming out of that. Super fresh. Green. That hop. Now, I like hop ciders. I'm not one to like go and seek them out. There's one particular hop cider that I try to get every year from this, you know, kind of, you know, dude out in the UK. You might know him by the name of Tom Oliver. He makes it incredible, you know, at the hop. So let's see what you're doing here. And I'll do a little bit pouring so everybody could hear. I'm actually drinking. Oh, let me just let that simmer in the cup. So super, super clarity. I'm going to hold it up to my light. Nice light straw color. Really aromatic. It's just, again, all your ciders just pop out of the glass. And you can't say that about every cider. You know, sometimes you're like looking for some aromatics. Now, my true confessions, I'm also a craft beer writer. Been doing that for, you know, 20 plus years. So I do know my hops a bit. I did not read the label on this. I just saw hop cider. I'm going to hold this one. There you go again. This is like this, like, you know, balanced cider where you have the hops here and the apple is coming through. How the heck does this dude do this? Are you like impressing the heck out of me? Because a lot of hop ciders are really pronounced with the hops. And I'm taking, you have probably a couple different hops here because you're in hop heaven. Right, I'm going to take another sip. Wow, I'm just, the nose is like, I could just drink by just smelling. Wow. Structure, a lot of complexity here. You have some, like, you know, that astringency coming through. Not, you know, it's not like sweet. It's just really tart. And the hops are like the pillow that the apple sits on.
Nice.
Wow. So how do you incorporate the hops into your cider? Because everybody does it a little differently. It's really nice. Wow. I'll keep drinking. You could start talking.
A blend of apples, fermented dry, aged a typical 5-7 months or so. And then so filtered. And then I take three types of hops. So Nelson Sauvin is a New Zealand hop, but grown in Washington State. And it's Sauvin, like Sauvignon Blanc is how I remember it. Mm-hmm. Really nice with like a white wine. And so it has some fruity esters, not too bitter.
No.
So we'll add that in. And then some lemon drop, which is like citrus grandbaby. It's like really citrusy. Mm-hmm. Bright, aromatic, and then a little bit of mosaic, and mosaic is real fruity, but mosaic could be like pretty strong, so that one's in the smallest quantity. But I'll soak the hops in there for about 5 to 7 days, And then
in like a mesh bag, are you putting in like a cheesecloth or something?
Bag. So yeah. We'll do like, I think this year, 400 gallons of cider. And then I have a measured amount that I put in of each one, but I'll let it soak in there for about a week and then pull it out and then really quickly filter to tote, put it straight in the bright tank and then carbonate. And then we'll carbonate. We don't have a temperature, real good temperature control as far as like glyco units and stuff like that. So we sort of made a bottling room inside of a Connex box that we put air conditioners on the top of, but it does get cool in there enough to carbonate. We'll carbonate for about a week too, and then we'll bottle it. But yeah, that's our hop. So every year we'll have our dry, semi-sweet hopped, and then we'll always make a rosé. And I just love red flesh apples. I think our rosés will become prominent. We'll have more of them. We have like 9 types of red flesh apples. And as I said, we have red flesh Perry that's going to be coming down the pike. But so we'll always have a rosé and then a wood aged. And then this year, additionally, we have a 100% quince and then a Perry. Last year, a friend of mine had nearby had invited us over to come pick cherries, sour cherries. And me and my kids went and we picked cherries until they were like begging for us to leave. But we picked a lot of cherries and I preserved them in a way that with the thought to use them this summer. And so we're going to make a cherry cider, and I think it'll just be a really small run, just a little something for the summer. And then also I got a couple hundred pounds of apricots last year, and so we'll make apricot cider this year too. But I don't know if those will make it into a bottle. There is a tasting room at Tulip Valley Winery where people can come and visit. And if I'm there, I'm happy to show you around, show you the trees, and we could drink off the vessels right there. And,
oh, my goodness. I'm drooling thinking about that. Well, you know, I just want to tell everybody out there in Ciderville, like, your ciders are so good. It gives us all a reason to go to Washington State and up into your valley. Really, really nicely balanced ciders. And that just makes me feel so happy that you're kind of like new to the game and you're coming out the, you know, the gate, like just running full tilt, because your personality, I think, lends a lot into the cider, Dave. And you're letting it go. You're kind of letting it do its thing. You're not forcing yourself upon the cider. And it really shows. I mean, this apple is coming through in a hop cider. And that's one of the things, as a judge, I look for in a cider is if there's anything added to it, can the hop, you know, not be the main factor here and instead have the apple? And that's exactly what you have. You have the apple speaking to us first. You're slamming it, man. You're really slamming it. Yeah. Kudos to everybody there, you and your wife, Heather.
Oh, thank you. Well, I couldn't do it without her and also with people like you. I learned so much, you know, whenever I tune in to Cider Chat and I can hear people throughout the industry and learn about yeast and learn about equipment or learn about, you know, legalities and cider makers from around the world, like you are awesome. So thank you, Rhea. I will make a little sound in.
Go to the show notes for this year, episode 325, and you'll be able to find the contact info for Alma Cider and also the contact info for Tulip Valley Winery, which has Alma Cider on tap while we wait for their own tasting room to be built. If you like what you heard on this year's podcast and you've stuck around this long, well, do consider becoming a patron of Cider Chat today. Your support helps keep the podcast on the air and rolling out episodes every week, as it has done for the past 7 seasons. You can check it all out at the Cider Chat Patreon page, which is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N, or just hit the donate button at ciderchat.com. And with that, I leave you here. This is Real Wind Caller, signing off for now. Looking forward to seeing you in Ciderville.
Strange apples, bitter sharp. Strange apples, juicy ripe. Bop, 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 ba-dop, doo-doo-dop, bop, 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 ba-dop, doo-doo-dop. Who wants a tannin balm?
I want a tannin balm.
Who wants to pull them down?
I'm gonna pull them down. Hey, 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 apples, bittersweet.
Strange apples,
hanging high.
Got them strange apples.
Forget the pie.
Strange apples.
Squeeze them tight.
Got them strange
apples. Strange apples. Strange apples. Make them pop.
I want a tannin balm.
Who wants to pull them down?
I'm gonna pull them down. Hey, 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 apples.
Come and see. Plenty strange apples for you and me. Strange apples. Strange apples. Apples, make them pop.
Pop, pop, pop.
Ba-da, doo-doo-da. Pop, pop, pop. Ba-da, doo-doo-da. Pop, pop, pop. Ba-da, doo-doo-da. Pop, pop, pop. Pop, 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 pop.
Yee-haw!